Okay.
Okay.
Okay, came time for the project monitors from the Navy to come and discuss just what they wanted done. We knew it had to be done, but they wanted to go over it to make sure there were no misunderstandings. And everything went fine, and they were at the point of breaking for lunch. Everything had been covered in this. I was there with others. And there was about $1 million not in the grant that had to be spent for books and equipment, lots of things like that, that would be given only when we said, here's what we need. Because you didn't know that at the start until you got into the situation. So one of the team members from Pitt asked, can we just go ahead and order the stuff? And they said, no, tell us where you want to order it, and we'll have to check them against the blacklist.
Okay.
I'm listening, and I'm making notes of all this. And then they break for lunch.
I know, it's good.
Okay. So, I break for lunch, and I then go to see the dean. I said, did you hear what I heard? I said, what? I told him. I said, oh, yeah. I said, well, what do you want to do about it? He said, well, what, do you want to give up the contract? Lose $1 million or $1.5 million? So I said, well, you're the principal investigator. You've got to decide what you want to do. He said, well, I'll talk it up with the provost. It was Roden Smith at the time. Well, I waited a week, 2 weeks. Nothing happened. So I went to see Roden. I said, told him what happened. So he said, yeah, he talked to me about it, and you know, when you talk it, it sounds more urgent than when he talked to me about it. So he said, well, I'll talk to Wes about it. Well, I waited a while. Nothing happened. You know Saul Weisberg?
I know.
He used to be associate director of the UJF.
Right.
We're
okay.
Good friends.
Right.
So I talked to Saul. I said, what do you talk about things like that? Well, he put me in touch with the folks in Washington, the various Jewish agencies, and they asked me to come down, and I came down to discuss this, about what to do. And I met with all these are smart people, the heads of these agencies, and they said, well, it's up to you. You know, we would like you to blow the whistle on them. And we have contacts with the Department of Commerce agency that takes care of this sort of thing. Well, to make a long story short, I decided to go ahead, blew the whistle. And they told me, Roz was with me as I gave a deposition for about a whole morning, and they said, you know, this is the first time they've had a credible story of this sort from a high-level person in an academic institution. We know this exists. We never had an opportunity to go after it.
Who said that?
This was the
Pitt.
No, this was the Department of Commerce, the head.
I see. Okay.
This unit. It's the one that deals with this problem. Okay. So said you're not going to hear any more about this. This is we go our own way. And we surround the topic. We go into other agencies. We go into other universities, other industries to get enough information to be able to zero in on just this thing. You're not going to hear about it. But maybe someday we'll let you know. But you're out of it. You know, forget about it. 3 months later, I see a team come in. And all the top brass at Pitt with the books were there. And they were interviewing each one under oath, it turned out, and I just disappeared, you know. Anyway, I get a call from the university council one morning. It was funny, his name is Sullivan. He's not there anymore. And my secretary got the name wrong. She said, Mr. Solomon called you. Anyway, so we kidded about that. Anyway, Sullivan said the chancellor would like to see you. I went over, and Sullivan was there, Bosvar, and me. and Posworth found out that I had blown the whistle. And as I came in, he started yelling at me, "Why did you do this? Why did you see me first? Why did you? You think you're going to hurt me? I've got the best of friends in the Jewish community. I was a classmate of Jesse Cohen's." And on, he ranted on and on. So I said, you know, and I told him what I'd done. I went to the people that I reported to. He kept ranting on and on. So I finally said, "Wes, shut up." And I turned on my heels and walked out. So when you asked what our relations were, they were terrific after that. Because every time there was a salary increase to be gotten, I got more than anyone else. And I judged that he was afraid to cope with this, you know, that it would be punishing me for that. So our relationship, you know, was cool.
What happened to the contract? Sorry.
I'd like to know what blacklisting is. No one knows that on the tape. Okay, what was blacklisting? Could you elaborate on that?
The what?
What blacklisting?
Blacklisting.
You mentioned blacklisting.
Oh,
the Saudi.
I understand that, but it has to be on the tape.
Guys. The Saudi is the blacklist. It's the Saudi list of companies that they do not permit anyone to deal with. They won't buy from them. These are Israeli companies or companies that Israelis control or whatever, or Jews control.
Thank you. Yeah. Now, did they get to what happened to the contract?
Well, the contract was completed.
Yes.
By the way, the Navy guy who was named in this, who had visited, called me and pleaded with me over the phone to say that, to renege on what I said, but I refused. Because his career was shot because of it.
Oh. So, in other words, you bought the books from companies that were not...
Well, we didn't buy it. I mean, from that moment on, I was out of the street. They didn't have me involved, which was okay with me. But the contract was completed. I did finally hear from the...
So the final result of all this was...
That the university did not get fined or anything, but was forced to write a policy and to promise to live by it on matters like this. And... Posvar obviously insisted that I review the policy before it became final. So,
very good. Yeah. Now, were you already retired, or did you get to meet the new chancellor?
I met him just once or twice,
yeah.
But not on any thing. It was at a pre-football game where whenever there's a home game, there's a brunch. And a lot of drinking going on, and then the whole group goes to the chancellor's box. So I had one of those, and I met him and his wife. Nice people, but
okay. Now I want to know about your. Is there anything else about Pitt before we go on to St. Petersburg? So what's your title now at Pitt? You are.
I'm distinguished professor of information science, emeritus.
Okay. And you go once a week?
Yeah, when I'm a term, yeah.
Okay. Oh, one other thing I want to know. In the early days, with all your technology, did they have to have specially air-conditioned rooms?
Oh, yeah. And
clean rooms and things like that?
Yeah.
You mean for the computer?
With the big computers?
Oh, yeah.
For
sure. Yeah.
You don't need that anymore?
Well,
or do you?
No. I mean, more now it's a human comfort issue.
Right. But also backups.
Right? It depends on the size of the computer. If it's a microcomputer, PC, you know, it's not the size of one.
But that might be history someday. I remember those huge computers and clean rooms.
Yeah. I went to a bake.
Yeah. Okay, let's go on. I want to know more about this university at St. Petersburg. What's it called?
The university...
Where you winter, your homemade university. Or maybe it's not homemade. It's somewhere in your...
Oh, this special purpose computer that
no, we... No. You, when you're in St. Petersburg, you attend
or
give courses at... What's it called?
I don't give courses. Aspect. the Academy of Senior Professionals at Eckerd College.
Okay, that's it.
Yeah.
Academy
of Senior Professionals.
Okay. Tell us about it.
It's a membership organization fostered by Eckerd College in that they provide a building at no charge to the group. Very, very, very nice building. It used to be the residence of the president for our meetings and for our computer room and a library and whatever. It's a membership organization that's grown over a period of, what, maybe 10 years to where there are something like 300 members and associate members. Now, when there's a couple, husband and wife, either the husband or wife typically applies to become the member, and the other spouse becomes the associate member. Both can become full members, but the difference in what you can do is so slight, you can't vote during Senate meetings, that no one wants to pay the extra dues for the associate member. Okay. The members are from all areas of learning, business, military, the arts, the sciences, and there are requirements that you get a major mark in your field to be able to get in. The group has programs that they set up themselves, and typically it's a group that decides an interest group. They're interested in philosophy, for example. That's been one of the very popular groups. And they meet once a week to discuss various issues in the area. And anyone who wants to attend, attends. It's gotten to the point of philosophy where some of the issues are sufficiently complex that you're asked, not required, but you're asked to do some reading so you can speak intelligibly about it in the discussions. That group is maybe 40, 50 typically come to that group once a week for an hour.
Is there a leader?
There are three leaders.
But they're from the group?
From the group, oh yeah.
Not from the university?
Oh no, from the group.
Okay.
More recently, one of those three summarizes the readings and then opens it up for the discussion and debates and things of that sort. That's one type of thing. There was another one on, started more recently, on the common roots of Judaism and Christianity, and same sort of setup. That meets weekly. Then there's some that don't meet weekly. There's one, a retired missionary who was in Egypt and the Middle East for 19 trips and is interested in the archaeology of the area. So he gave a sort of a mini course of 5 lectures on that. That didn't have much discussion because all you could do was ask questions. And there's one retired periodontist from Rutgers University who was chairman of the department who during certain months, once a week, gives a lecture and performance of an opera, or portions of an opera.
Oh, how wonderful.
That's his passion.
Uh-huh.
And so he gives a little discussion, then plays a little bit, discussion, plays a little bit. Then they have, you name the topic, and someone will have done it. And this goes on 5 days a week, morning and afternoon, sometimes evenings as well. Some of the programs are sufficiently interesting so that students are invited to come. And some are so interesting that they're open to the entire St. Petersburg community and they're announced. Then they offer a forum every now and then. So this is on a special topic, and I do that once a year. I give a forum. The one I'm getting ready now for when we return is one on virtual reality.
Wow. Mm.
Virtual reality. It's an interesting computer-related area. So, but I'm sweating that one out. It's a hard one.
I was going to say, you have to prepare very well because you're with really peers. I mean, people who can judge you.
Oh, yeah.
That's why. And this whole thing is self-administered?
Self-administered,
yeah. So the university, the college gives you space, period.
Gives space.
This is like a cultural center, then.
Now, CMU has something like that also. It just started.
And CMU is courses.
Yeah.
It's not...
I see.
As it's been described to me, it's quite different.
I see.
Yeah.
But this
is much more open.
This is open, and this is our own thing. We go when we want it. You don't have to register for anything.
It's like a cultural center.
Well.
No?
I don't know what you mean by a cultural center.
It's like a accumulation of people bring their areas of expertise and interest.
Oh, okay. Okay, then it is. And there's a relatively situation to the relatively set annual fee.
What is the annual fee?
The annual fee is $720.
That's a lot. So you have...
Is that for your members?
For the members, yeah.
And the associates?
That includes the associate. If the associate wants to become a regular one, they've got to pay an additional.
So it's an incentive to really attend and participate.
I mean, you've got to be serious.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously. Okay.
And there's lots of interviewing before you come, not only about your accomplishments. And by the way, real references, they go after the references, they go into your background. Uh-huh. But more than that, they want to know what type of a person you are. And there, you find that a number of the members take you out to dinner and your wife out to dinner to see what sort of social animals you are. And would you just sit there and soak it up, or would you contribute too? Because they don't want just soakers.
That's good. It's
like a club, then.
Like a what?
Like a club.
Yeah.
So,
now,
we would not be going to St. Petersburg if it weren't for that.
I see.
That's
stimulating.
Does it run in the summer also, do you know?
Yeah,
it does.
With a reduced schedule.
I see.
Because it's hard to live in St. Petersburg in the summer.
Is Eckerd College, I never heard, is that a liberal arts college?
It's liberal arts. It started out as a church-related school. It was a Presbyterian college. And Jack Eckerd, the drug magnate, the drugstore, the Eckerd drugstore.
Okay.
Was convinced during a time of financial difficulty to make a very major gift. And it became Eckerd College.
I see.
And now they're in good shape financially. They've drawn a lot of. They have an ongoing Elder Hostel program with an Elder Hostel Center.
That's a good place for it,
and
sure.
And people come, you know.
Sure.
They have no trouble getting distinguished speakers into the area. They get a free vacation.
Sure, it's wonderful. But this...
Mitchell lives there.
Who does?
James Mitchell, the author.
Does
he's
he
a member.
Of your group?
Yeah.
Anybody else famous besides Michener and you?
What else matters? What you know those stuff. There are a lot of very well-known people. Retired CEOs of large corporations. Sherwin Williams.
That's really exciting.
Yeah.
I would like to...
Smart people. It's just a great feeling.
You exchange your expertise and share. Yeah. Well, that sounds like it keeps you busy in Florida. Do you have any real hobbies?
Not really.
No.
Not really.
Okay.
You know, I keep busy with the encyclopedias all year round, and this in the wintertime as well. Somehow or other.
That takes up all your time.
Yeah, we're going places all the time. So.
Okay. Now, we're really sort of getting to the end.
Okay.
How do you view your accomplishments?
Well, you know, when I look at my vita, I can't believe it. You know, that you know, how did it happen that I didn't have the appropriate education? And I had the good fortune to be able to do all this. So, well, what else could I say? I feel very fulfilled.
So that you have no regrets?
Regretted it? Hell no.
Is there anything you would have done differently?
I don't know. I've been a very pragmatic type, and taking advantage of opportunities, or what seemed to be opportunities, gambled a lot, you know. And fortunately, the gambles paid off in a career.
I should say. Now, what do you think is your? Can you say what is your most significant accomplishment?
Outside of my family.
Of course, that's first. What second?
Professionally, you mean.
Yeah.
I like your answer.
Yeah. Doesn't have to be professionally. Just.
Well, I guess it's the publications that I think are the most significant to me. Anything else you do evaporates. But publications, there they are. They stay in the libraries, and they're there for others to take advantage of when they wish. And that's a lasting contribution. And that, to me, is that I feel most fulfilled about. And obviously with the former students who are doing well, that's that as well, too.
Have you ever had, like, a reunion of your students at any of these meetings?
Well, oh, yeah, there. Well, I don't go to the meetings anymore. Mm-hmm. I have. I used to watch retirees come to the meetings and sort of be around. And, you know, they were pests, really. You know, they're not contributing anymore, and they expect to be recognized, and no one wants to really talk to them. So I cut out immediately once I retired. Once I was active, always there were always reunions of the program. Every year we had a reunion at the Major Professional Society, and informal reunions at the bars all the time at these meetings. And I get a fair amount of correspondence from some of them. Yeah.
Ray, do you have any more questions?
Unfinished business. Do you have any unfinished business?
I don't know. I can't think of anything. I'm talked out.
No, I mean unfinished business in your life.
Oh, in my life? Well, I guess to see Greece.
I love that.
You want to know, Alan, if I could have been, I'm not supposed to talk on the tape. That's exactly what was on my mind, is seeing Greece because of our beginning discussion.
Yeah.
Hope you do, for your wife's sake.
Well, she's worked hard.
Anthropologically, it's an incredible place. You can make a real project out of it, especially on Crete.
Well, she deserves it. She's worked just as hard as I have.
Is there anything else about Raj you want to tell us? You did tell us quite a bit. She's quite unique, obviously.
Yeah.
I know you'd said she taught herself Russian.
She teaches Russian too, doesn't she?
And she worked with the Russian immigrants, didn't
she?
Tell us a little bit about that. We still have room on the table.
Well, first she started out not teaching herself Russian. She got a high school teacher in Cleveland to come in several times a week and start teaching her. So that's the way she started. Then she's taken some courses in Russian as well. In St. Petersburg, she continues to sit in on some classes to keep her fluency going. And I mentioned she taught Russian to librarians at Pitt for 5 years. Oh, yes, she did. And wrote a textbook that was published on that. She did a translation of a Russian research book.
Oh, yes, you mentioned
that. I mentioned
yes,
that sort of thing.
What work did she do when the first Russians came to Pittsburgh?
She worked with the Family and Children's Service. She was employed by them and working in resettlement. And she said that was one of the most rewarding.
What year was that?
Remember?
I think it was
8, 10 years ago.
I don't know.
Well, we can find that.
Yeah.
But she was a professional. I mean, she was paid.
Oh, yeah, she was paid. And that way the flow stopped. She couldn't continue. And then started to... then she worked... Who was Bobby? The Federation, I think, employed her to deal with Russian students in high schools that were having trouble. So she did that for a number of years. And then she, there was an attempt at one time to start a branch of the Jewish Center in South Hills.
Right.
So for a period she tried to get that started, and she got very discouraged.
Is that viable now or not?
Well, it's started again after a number of years, and we don't know if it's viable or not.
Because they do, in their publications, mention things in the South Hills.
Yeah. So she did that for a while, and she doesn't want to do it. She doesn't want to work for money anymore,
mm-hmm.
period. Just as I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I don't want to.
Did you, because of her Russian, did you interact with some of these immigrants early on?
It's funny, last night we went out to dinner with a couple. One of the first ones was Vladimir and Tanya Ginsburg. I don't know if you know the name.
I know the name, but I don't know.
Yeah, so we've been relatively close to them.
Did you help any of them find employment?
Well, mostly Rose. She was terrific at this. The most notable one for her that she believes, and I think so, was at the time when there was the subway was being, the rapid transit was being to be built.
Yeah.
And Parsons Company was the overall consulting contractor for that job. And we met the general manager, who was on site here and moved in from Hawaii to handle that. And we got to know them socially. And he said he's having a devil of a time getting a subway engineer. Where do you find it? Well, it turned out Ross had just resettled someone who had designed the Leningrad subway. A guy from an Everfray. So she told him about it. He says, I'd like to talk to him. He says, he knows no English. I said, that's all right. I'll get someone to interpret for me. Well, the guy was hired. And at a fantastic salary, probably the largest salary any emigre ever got to start.
Wonderful.
That was her gratitude.
That is a success story.
Oh, yeah.
She also taught Hebrew, didn't she?
Yeah.
Because she taught my little son, 28. She was his bar mitzvah teacher at Temple Emmanuel.
Yeah.
Is she doing, now you say she doesn't like to do work, paid work anymore.
No paid
is she doing volunteer work now?
That's where she is now. She takes on one student at a time, an emigre who needs augmentation of their English. So she's got
I see. Now these are young people or anybody?
This one happens to be a younger person.
I see.
38 years old, something like that.
Okay, so it's a one-on-one kind of thing.
One-on-one, she works fairly hard each time to figure out just what they need, and she spends part of the week getting stuff together that will help them, and then presents it to them.
Do these people go to the English as a second language? I think that's part of the intermediate English.
Many of them do.
Yeah.
Most of them do. But that's a group activity, and it doesn't do what they need.
And then do they get the one-on-one in addition?
Yeah.
I think that's how it works.
That's a counseling
right.
project.
Right.
And she beats the men out of the house.
That's National Council of Jewish Women.
Yeah.
Oh, they will always be there. And are you doing any volunteer work?
Not now.
No.
I really don't have time for stuff now. If someone asked me, you know, I might.
Busy.
It was something that was that I could do. But you know, I keep busy.
I'd see that. Great. Okay. I don't think I have any more questions.
No.
Thank you very, very much.
Nice to
Professor
you.
Kent. We call you Professor Kent. We can't call you Doctor.
That's right.
I scratched out all the doctors. It was a great pleasure.
Thank you.